loud and clear.
We are back. I'm Brian Becker. North Korea in the crosshairs. Days after the UN issued tough sanctions against the DPRK, thousands of U.S. soldiers, sailors, and Marines and divisions of the South Korean military are carrying out war exercises simulating the invasion and destruction of the DPRK starting today. We are joined by Gregory Ilitch. He is on the advisory board of the Korea Policy Institute. Welcome back, Gregory.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
You had an article that was published on February 20th, 2016 in Counterpunch entitled U.S. Plans for North Korea Threaten International Security. And I want to read the first paragraph and then have you talk about it. And you write, relations with North Korea are once again in crisis mode. North Korea, we are told, inexplicably launched dual provocations with its nuclear and ballistic missile tests, threatening the security of the United States. It is a simple story with North Korean irrationality and belligerence on one side and Washington's customary desire for peace and stability on the other. Talk about how this so-called simple story isn't so simple.
Oh, that's my direction to go with that. But let's take the image that we're presented of the United States as having a customer, as customarily being interested in peace and stability, despite all the evidence to the contrary of its consistent bombings and invasions of other countries. But it portrays itself as seeking peace. North Korea, on the other hand, has not attacked anyone, and it's portrayed as being belligerent and threatening. It's pursuing a nuclear weapons program, whereas India, Pakistan, Israel, also operating outside the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and with far more advanced weapons programs, nuclear weapons programs, receive U.S. aid rather than the sanctions that North Korea is hit with. North Korea sees what happened to Yugoslavia with the bombing, the bombing of Libya, the invasion of Iraq, U.S. support to Islamic extremists in Syria, and it recognizes that without a nuclear deterrent, a small country like itself that's in the crosshairs of the United States needs that nuclear deterrent in order to ward off any possibility of attack.
Let's talk about, if we could, what's actually happening today. How the deep with the war exercises? What are they called? What are they designed to do? What do they do? And how does the government and the DPRK perceive it?
Okay, well, there are two exercises. One's called Key Resolve, and the other is Four Ego, and they're run more or less simultaneously, although one is shorter than the other. And they'll be running from today through April 30th. And this year will be the largest exercises yet held between South Korea and the United States. And they're held in the area of the Korean Peninsula. So they're practicing the invasion of North Korea. So this year, for the first time, they're going to be carrying out a scenario of implementing what's the latest operations plan for attacking North Korea called Op Plan 5015, which calls for a preemptive strike on North Korea and also has plans for what it calls decapitation strikes to kill North Korean leaders. So this particular operation, they're going to be game playing in these exercises, are going to be aimed at destroying North Korean nuclear and missile facilities and other strategic targets in a preemptive strike. And according to one South Korean military official, they're going to be practicing large-scale attack drills with smart weapons to make the largest damage possible, and they'll be carried out so that North Korea will feel a greater threat. So this is explicitly intended to threaten North Korea. A South Korean military official just came right out and said so.
The United States government, which is a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, as was the DPRK, the North Korea, until they withdrew and began building nuclear weapons during this century, following George W. Bush coming into office, the U.S. is actually modernizing its nuclear weapons in a very particular way to make them more usable. And when you hear usually unnamed anonymous military sources from the Pentagon talking about why are they modernizing nuclear weapons that have the ability to lower or increase the yield, in other words, to make it a more powerful or less powerful, to make it a smart nuke, meaning it can be targeted against particular very precise facilities, perhaps avoiding some of the large-scale civilian damage. but nonetheless increasing the lethality and usability of nuclear weapons. I mean, they're talking about it from the point of view of using it against North Korea.
Yes, because of the experience North Korea had in the Korean War, where the United States bombers had basically obliterated every single town and left no building standing, essentially. North Korea has a lot of underground facilities, deep underground. So the U.S. has developed what they call bunker-busting bombs to penetrate deep into the earth. And then, as you say, these tactical nuclear warheads, so it's aimed at that. And I think the point for the U.S. to develop these particular types of nuclear weapons is to make them more acceptable to be used without generating the same kind of opposition that a full-scale nuclear weapon would generate.
Right. So if you image nuclear bombs being dropped, say, on Nagasaki and Hiroshima as they were, then you know 100,000, 200,000, or however many human beings and other living things were there are incinerated or killed quickly. But if you can, say, target the leadership of North Korea, then you're going after the lunatic, you know, entity that's threatening world peace by its own nuclear arsenal. Yeah, that's I see your point. That is designed to make it seem rational and, you know, not engage large numbers of civilian deaths, meaning it becomes conceivable to use, where nuclear weapons, as such a scourge, you know, most people in society think the last thing we want to do is use nuclear weapons. Let's talk a little bit about the sanctions that were just imposed by the United Nations Security Council. They are drastic sanctions. And why? I mean, North Korea hasn't done things that other countries, including the United States or China or Russia, haven't done.
It's a bit shocking, actually, to read through the text of the UN sanctions as to why. I think the United States feels that it can't really, or it's constrained from attacking North Korea in the way it would like to. First, because North Korea has a lot of artillery within range of Seoul, and also because North Korea is developing its nuclear weapons. So you can't really, say, bomb it the same way that the United States did with Libya or Yugoslavia, for instance. So it's going to this full court press of sanctions on North Korea, hoping to topple the government that way through basically a collective punishment of the entire population and driving the economy into the abyss.
Why did China agree? It took 7 weeks, it seemed like. It seemed like an endless amount of time to get the language on the resolution. And at least in the Western media, it's portrayed as a real possible sea change in the terms of China's orientation on this question with the DPRK, even though they have voted for other weaker sanctions resolutions in the past. Talk about China, if you would. What do you think is happening there?
Yeah, that is disappointing. I think there are maybe at least a couple of things going on. One, of course, the United States was talking about installing a THAAD battery, which has a radar that could be used, could be shifted to a mode that would actually detect Chinese missiles rather than North Korean, and it would be integrated in the U.S. missile defense system. So this is, and the U.S. is also building up its military in the Asia Pacific, and it's mainly aimed at China. So I think there was an element of behind the scenes. It's been applied on the previous occasion of sanctions. Actually, not applied, actually. The previous occasion of sanctions, the United States officials were threatening China that they would do a greater buildup of military than they had planned if they didn't go along. So it hasn't really been reported as the case this time, but I suspect it has been the case that there were threats behind the scene of a greater military buildup against China. The other thing, I think China feels uncomfortable with North Korea's nuclear program, not in and of itself, but because it knows that the United States is using that as a pretext for a military buildup against China. So China sees that as having an effect that's rebounding against them.
You know, at one time after North Korea was created as a separate entity following the division of Korea at the 38th parallel in 1945, North Korean communists were in charge of the government. And during that time period from 45 to 49, they sent thousands of North Korean soldiers to fight along with Mao and the revolutionary armies against Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists. There was a lot of, you know, blood spilled in solidarity. And then during the Korean War, the Chinese, a million Chinese came across and helped drive the U.S. back below the 38th parallel. It's a historic relationship. And to see the Chinese government working with the United States government, even if there's sort of a rationality to it, as you're saying, they're trying to, in a way, appease the U.S. to diminish the tensions directed against them or the conflict directed against them. It seems like it may be a historic frame of this relationship between DPRK and China. Do you think there could be a break?
I don't like to speculate about the future because, there's always surprises in store, but I don't think there'll be a full break. It's just that history of solidarity, although it's strained these days, is, I don't think it can die off entirely, and they still have important relations with each other. I think the United States actually is worried about that relationship itself because actually one of the features of the Four Ego and Key Resolve exercises that we're conducting is this, practicing the scenario of sending U.S. troops to the northern portion of North Korea to seal off the border with China in order to prevent Chinese intervention. And that's an explicit scenario they're going to be practicing. So the United States is worried about that relationship being stronger than it appears at the moment.
Yeah, thank you for that. When you talk about it like that, they're talking about sealing the northern part of the border between China and North Korea, and preemptive war. Just if the American people could put the shoe on the other foot and think about the DPRK doing something like this, I mean, it would be treated as really an act of war, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard to make an exact analogy because there's no nation that has a kind of power imbalance against the United States or the United States has against the DPRK. But even to take a smaller scenario, let's imagine that Russia and Cuba were conducting military exercises on an annual basis in the Caribbean, explicitly practicing the invasion of the United States. The media reaction would be absolutely hysterical, and there'd be calls for attacking Cuba and Russia. But just imagine now in North Korea. It's a small country, and the power imbalance between the United States and South Korea against North Korea, and they feel, multiply that feeling that the U.S. would have with Russia and Cuba practicing invasion, multiply that feeling by the power imbalance, and you know then how North Koreans feel with about these exercises.
I heard on National Public Radio an interview by one of the NPR reporters with a Chinese think tank guy. He's from China. He's highly critical of the DPRK, said the Chinese deciding to impose sanctions showed the great disappointment and sort of upsetness that the Chinese had because the North Koreans had humiliated them and not listened to them, even though China helps economically. And then at the end of the interview, the NPR person said, well, what do you think the DPRK really wants with this? And the guy said, the Chinese think tank person said, oh, they want a peace treaty. They want bilateral relations with the United States. In other words, that's what they really want. Talk about what the DPRK has tried to do in terms of getting peace talks going and why the U.S. just won't do it.
Well, of course, the previous agreements broke down each time because the United States did not carry out its agreement, its part of the agreements. But the North Korea has consistently, over the years of the Obama administration, asked the United States for negotiations, and the Obama administration has repeatedly snubbed them and saying that you have to substantially denuclearize as a precondition for talks. And then, in other words, North Korea would basically have to give the U.S. its end goal in order, and all it would receive in return is a promise of talk. And that's all it would receive. I think the U.S. officials have actually responded on at least a couple occasions to North Korean requests for talks by saying they don't want to reward bad behavior, as if talking about, as if negotiations or a peace treaty is, quote, bad behavior. It's a complete turning around of reality.
It just came out in the media that the North Koreans had, I think secretly, offered the start of peace treaty talks. The State Department released this just in the last few weeks, and the U.S. just rejected it. Talk about that.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of reports which were at variance with each other, so I'm not quite sure exactly what happened, but apparently there was a request again for peace talks, and North Korea apparently wanted a peace treaty to be part of those talks, and the U.S. apparently wasn't satisfied with the nuclear part of the equation, but these reports are variance each other, so I'm not quite sure of the specifics. But again, it's even if the United States did not like whatever the opening offer was, it's still a basis to begin talks and make their own offer. But the U.S. has shown no interest whatsoever in diplomacy. The U.S. often talks, U.S. officials often talk about, well, we tried diplomacy and it's failed. Well, no, they've never tried diplomacy here.
Right, and the Obama administration just reversed course on Iran, and there's a joint comprehensive plan of action, the Iran nuclear deal. That was after three decades of not talking. There was a time around 2000 when it looked like the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton's administration, was about to, or at least contemplating, normalizing relations. In the last minute or so, Gregory Ilitch, talk about, is it possible that there can be a shift in U.S. policy as there was in Iran? What do you think the prospects are for that?
I don't think it will happen unless after the next South Korean presidential election, if a more progressive South Korean president is elected, one who's committed to, or at least has a passing interest in reducing tensions and finding some kind of settlement. It's not a coincidence that there was a greater progress along this front with North Korea when Nomyuk-hyun was the president of South Korea. He was a much more progressive president than his two successors. So I think a lot depends upon what happens in South Korea. So if South Korea has a government that's more interested and pushes for peace, then they might be able to drag the United States to some extent along with them. But it's not going to happen until then.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Gregory Ilitch. He's an advisory board member of the Korea Policy Institute. He's a writer. His latest article can be found at Counterpunch in February 2016. It was called U.S. Plans for North Korea Threaten International Security. Check it out. After a short break, we will be right back.
Loud and clear.